Well, hi everybody, welcome along to Tuesday morning, and welcome to those online. As Yvette said, we're doing this death and rebirth class. This is the final in the class. I think for a fortnight's time we do the review, so it'll cover everything in case you've missed stuff. That's right, next week is a game called Afflictions to Perfections. Helps you sort of understand Dharma in a game style thing, like to one. Okay, so let's begin as we normally do. We're going to take refuge, generate a mind of enlightenment. We're going to say a few prayers, and then the class will begin. And in the class, there will be breaks for discussion and a meditation. Please get comfortable in your seat. Adjust yourself until you actually do feel comfortable. This means that your back will be straight, your shoulders will be relaxed. And check and see if your head is settled evenly upon your neck. Then you allow your eyes to close. If your eyes close, your back straight, your head sitting equally, evenly upon the neck. And place your hands wherever you like. Make sure they're comfortable. And just let your body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself, just relax into awareness. Being relaxed within awareness means that you'll be able to hear the sounds of passing traffic. You'll be able to hear that blower that's going on. There are many different things you'll hear, but you can still be relaxed. And then from this state of relaxed awareness, imagine that the ground beneath you is made of starry sapphire light. It's soft, it's flecked with gold. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. You are surrounded by all sentient beings, with your father sitting beside you on the right and your mother beside you on the left. Your friends and family are in front of you. So your friends and family are behind you, and difficult people are in front of you. And surrounding these four groups of people are strangers. And within the space filled with rainbows and offerings appears a lion throne. And upon that throne is a cushion of lotus, sun and moon. And sitting on the moon seat is Buddha Shakyamuni. And he's surrounded by an assembly of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and deities and other enlightened beings. Now, you might not be able to see them in the mind's eye, but you can imagine that they're present. So try to feel the presence of enlightenment. Think that you're surrounded, or you're within the scope of the mind of the Buddha, who knows all objects. So your presence is known by all enlightened beings. And you take a moment now to recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive. The causes of death outnumber the causes for life. And to have the leisure and opportunity to attain your spiritual goals. It's important that you act quickly because things are not quite right. This world does not exist in the way it seems to. Nevertheless, you have met a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The external Buddha and your internal Buddha nature. The teachings of the path and the spiritual community. These are the three rare sublime ones. Now, to make your offering of practice as purely as possible, I want you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. And you're holding a Vajrayana bell in a sphere of great bliss. The body and mind have no boundaries. The bliss surrounds you and pervades. And from within this state, you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And in response from this heartfelt aspiration for refuge, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve in yourself and all living beings who surround you. So your negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and realizations of the Dharma. So cleansed by wisdom and love, empowered with wisdom, you recollect the four immeasurable thoughts, and you decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four immeasurable states. And so you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down. These dissolve into yourself and all living beings who surround you. Our negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and the realizations of Dharma. So feeling clean and clear, relax. And then imagine that from that state of relaxation appears the field for accumulating merit. And in front of these enlightened beings, you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. Now, to prevent ourselves from grasping and clinging to the states of purity and merit, We imagine that our body, speech, and mind, all our enjoyments and all merits, are utterly transformed into the enjoyments of a pure land. And you offer this pure land to the Buddha, the Lama, and the spiritual entourage. And so you say, this ground, anointed with perfumes, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kamayata Ami. So release the offering. The Buddha has accepted it. He smiles and he looks directly at you, and you look up into his eyes. In the eyes of the Buddha, you find immense humility, a deep wisdom, and acceptance. You recollect the meanings of renunciation, bodhicitta, and the correct view. And from the heart of the Buddha, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all environments and all beings. Everything dissolves into light, which dissolves into the Buddha. The Buddha begins to diminish in size and travels through space and rests above the crown of your head. Buddha then descends, enters through your crown, descending down to your heart. Your mind and the mind of the Buddha become of one nature. Within this non-dual state, you hear the mantra. In hearing the mantra of the Buddha, you begin to recite it too. Kayatam Muni Muni Mahamunaya Soha. Kayatam Muni Muni Mahamunaya Soha. Kayatam Muni Muni Mahamunaya Soha. And from your heart, rays of light fill the 10 directions of space. Every sentient being, the body within space, is utterly transformed into a fully awakened state. And the two purposes are achieved. From the 10 directions of space, the light begins to withdraw and it re-enters your heart. You can feel your body breathing itself. And acknowledge this meditation is one of imagination. The process has imprinted your mind with the potential for this full awakening for the benefit of others. You take enjoyment in that. You appreciate that today you've done something meaningful and useful. And that today you're going to put in place further causes for the enlightenment that you seek, which will be a benefit to all beings. Now breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth. At your own time, let your eyes flicker open, and then move your body in whichever way you'd like to, so that once again you feel quite at ease and present. Then look at first of all what we've just covered. We'll just do this briefly and then we'll get on to today's topic. So we began by looking at impermanence and worldly concern. We know there's two types of impermanence called gross and subtle. Gross impermanence often refers to death, the ending of this life. Subtle impermanence is not visible through your senses ordinarily. So it's ascertained through reasoning. And what it means is that some of the things do not endure for a second moment beyond the time of its occurrence. So it's just like flashing in and out. The very time they come in, they're going out. And this is the state of all produced phenomena. Now, the worldly concerns are produced phenomena. These are things like pleasure, pain, gain, loss, criticism, praise, that sort of thing. These are all produced phenomena, so they don't last. They'll come in and they go out. They're subject to change. Second week, we look at the six benefits of the recollection of death and the six faults in forgetting death. So what's the worst fault you think of forgetting? There's a type of meditation where you can actually familiarize yourself with death and impermanence. This is called the Nine Reasons Meditation. I have three roots, nine reasons and three conclusions. The conclusions are, I have to practice Dharma. I have to practice it right now. And the Dharma I practice right now has to be a pure Dharma. So what does pure Dharma mean here? Anyone? Okay, that's good. Can't be contaminated by that. Well, the concerns, the Dharma should not be about this life, that just the happiness of this life. It has to be aimed further. And at the time of death, we can use what they call the five forces. Does anybody recollect what the five forces were? Everybody recollect the acronym? Okay. So these five forces that we use at the time of death, we're going to be talking about them today, because you can also apply them during life. But the five forces are the force of intention, familiarity, white seed, repudiation, and aspirational prayer. We can apply this right at the time of death. They're really simple to do, because you find if you're actually practicing as a Buddhist, you're doing them all the time. But you're just probably not as familiar with the terms. Then we looked at dying and death, meaning the process of dying, the different external phenomena that are visible to your senses and the internal phenomena that are visible just to the dying person. We looked at karma and rebirth. So rebirth depends upon the previous activities that you've engaged in. So it's a causal process. That means it's subject to change, fluctuation. And then we looked at the realms and rebirth. So once you die, there's this process you go through, and then you find yourself reborn somewhere. What we want to do is find ourselves reborn as a human being with the leisure and the opportunity to keep on with the spiritual path, or to find yourself in a pure land where you can basically do the same thing, just less suffering in the pure land. Now today, we're going to be looking at, it's called the meaning of life, and then five powers you can use once you discover this meaning, or come up with a meaning, and then knowing this, how to help others at the time of death. So, you know, to do these courses, the FPMT Central Office sends me some material, and they say, I'm going to teach it, I've got to teach these things. Yeah. So one of them is this, what's the meaning of life? That was one of the questions, so I'll lift that right to the end. And then, how can we help someone else at the time of death? So these two things I've actually got to cover, and we will. Within that is the five forces for the time of death, because that will help you and it helps others. You can apply them to help others too. Let's have a look at some of the material I used. So again, it's not much different. There's some material here on thought transformation and the stages of the path. Again, in terms of the learning about this material, probably this book down here called Wholesome Fear is the easiest one. It's got a good size font if you're getting older like me and you don't read so well. And it's put across really clearly in a sort of calm way. And everything that I've covered is in that book plus more. So if you wanted a whole overview of this course, grab that book. Okay, let's look at our first thing, the purpose of life. I have a purpose for my life, and you may do yourself. But I thought I'd run this through the AI. I asked it. Right? So I was thinking about how do we determine that life has a purpose and meaning? There's basically two ways to do it. And they're both done by people, and they're both covered in philosophies and religions. So go either way. So one is that life has an intrinsic meaning. So life itself possesses meaning. That's one. The other is life is given meaning. So I've got a problem with life having an intrinsic meaning. I was searching for this intrinsic meaning when I was about 11. And by the time I was 13, I thought life had no meaning because there was none I could find. It took me to my 40 to actually discover that life still had a meaning, but it was one we gave. So that suited me. I thought, yep, that makes more sense to me. I'd gone too far when I was young, thinking because I couldn't discover any meaning in life, it had none. That's a mistake. So if life were to hold meaning itself, this is what we call intrinsic meaning. What would be the problem? Well, not so much a problem. What would follow if life had a meaning that was intrinsic? It would be the same for everybody. That's right, because we're all alive, aren't we? We all have life. We're all living. That's one thing that happened. So do you think we all have the same meaning to life? You think everybody, no, you're right. I don't think so either, Laura. Most people go, no, we've all got different meanings. So that shuts down intrinsic meaning pretty much straight away. The other thing is, the meaning would never be able to change. Something that is intrinsic does not depend upon anything else. Life and it are one and the same thing. So it can't change. What's another thing about it? Debbie's right. It would have no effect on us. The reason for that is because we could never know it. There's two opposites. This is an interesting thing. This is a big deal in Buddhism. You have intrinsic reality and dependent reality. If something is intrinsic, knowing is dependent, isn't it? It's dependent upon the mind. So we'd never be able to know it because it's not dependent. We either be unable to know the meaning of it, or the meaning would be known by all of us and it would never change. That's not our experience, is it? We go, okay, life doesn't have an intrinsic meaning. Life must have a dependent meaning. That's wonderful. That's great news for us. Because it means meaning and purpose of life is up to us. I think that's tremendous good news. So what's the meaning you want to give to your life? Now, when I face this question, like I discovered this when I was 40. And then, so what do you think I did? Well, what would you do if you know now that meaning and purpose are up to you? What would you do?
Yeah,
because
I find the answer.
But remember, the answer is not intrinsic. It's dependent. The answer's not out there. The answer's up to you. I did that. I still read a lot of books on that. I'm not looking for an intrinsic meaning. I was looking for a meaning that somebody else gave life. So I thought, that's a great meaning. Because I haven't decided yet. I can't work it out yet. Yeah. So what's the mission statement of business then? Yeah, it's a process. Yeah. So me being unable to work this process, so I thought I'll read a lot of material and find out what other people have given their lives, and I find it resonates with me. I go, that's a good idea. That's a great purpose for life. And I'll take that one. So what I do is I'm looking for the best purpose of life, the very best meaning you can give to life. And I think, I'll take that one. Because like I said, you choose, you make it up. So when I came to the Dharma, so I took me a few years after 40 to get to the Dharma. This is great meaning in life, and I've never been able to find better than it. And so the meaning in life that you give as a Mahayana Buddhist practitioner is to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. It says, I'm going to develop my wisdom and my compassion and every other skill you possibly can to be of benefit to others. I've never been able to find a better meaning to life. And I thought, that's a great meaning. And these guys go, yeah, this is the meaning you give to your life as a Mahayana Buddhist practitioner. You go, I'll take that one. Makes sense. I can't find anything better. Because if you imagine if you had, you know, a compassion, a wisdom, you didn't suffer because you overcome all the causes of suffering. You're able to help others effortlessly and spontaneously. I mean, what else would you want to do with your life? You know, I thought this was a great meaning. I thought, oh, I'm going to adopt that one. Purpose and meaning are not intrinsic to life, because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, and that's not our experience. So we must give it, we create it. So like I said, there's a lovely poem that says, so what is the meaning you will give to this wonderful life you have? Yeah. Wow, that's great, that's right. That's what we mean to do. So think about it and decide what you want, what purpose do you want to give to your life? And I suggest, one good one. One that's meaningful and makes sense to you. So that's our first thing we needed to cover. Now we'll come and have a look at these the five powers and how we can use them during life and how they can also be beneficial at the time of death and how we can help ourselves and others. So I'm going to use a quote here from a text called 7-Point Mind Training. So you'll see this verse in every text on 7-Point Mind Training, no matter who the person is making the commentaries. It says, in brief, the essence of the instruction is to train in the five powers. The five powers themselves are the great vehicle's precept on the transference of consciousness. Cultivate these paths of practice. So there's three parts to this quote. The first that I put up in blue is what we're going to be talking about today, how to use the five powers during your life. The second part, the five powers themselves are the great vehicle's precept on the transfer of consciousness, how to use the five powers at the time of death. When you're actually dying, use the five powers then. Then it says, cultivate these paths of practice, meaning become familiar with them. That's so that when during life you can use them, and during the time of death you can use them too. They cultivate your knowledge of them so they become sort of effortless to you. So the five powers for life are, as you can see on the screen, motivation. So this is, once you give your life meaning, you have a motive to live. Right? Tell yourself every morning you get up, this is the purpose of my life. Become familiar with it. Familiarization, right? It's called the white seed, rejection and dedication. I'll say again, these are the five powers that we use at the time of death. This time I've just given you, put up different names, because the names often change from the different texts. So motivation, the first one, the force or the power of motivation, is also called the propelling intention. This is the karma. As soon as you set a motivation, that's karma. It's an action of mind. So like I said, karma is one of the major sources of rebirth. The better meaning you can give to your life and put up front and center, that's karma. Right? It ensures a happy rebirth. Familiarization is also called the power of training and habituation. The white seed is virtue. White seed is always virtue, the positive action. The force of rejection, also called the force or the power of repudiation, exposure, revulsion or rejection. What you're rejecting is ego. Ego grasping, ego clinging, what's called egocentricity, the mind that works against your intention. We have, if we set this intention, this motivation, this is the purpose of my life, you will find that you're not always in accordance with it, but you do things that mess it up. We do. But we're going to find out what those things are and reject them. Because this is what I've decided for myself, but nevertheless, I'm still doing these things that aren't helping me. So I've got to work out what those are and reject them, put them aside. And last, the force of dedication is we have to dedicate ourselves to our motives. If we say, I want to become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings, you've got to dedicate your life to it as best you can. It's also called the power of prayer. So it's the last thing you say at night. Right? I go to bed. How did my day go today? I did this was in accordance with my intentions. This went against them. Okay, nevertheless, I've got to go to bed and try again tomorrow. It's that sort of thing. Yeah, so in other words, dedicate every positive action you perform, no matter how small, to developing love, compassion, wisdom. It's our ignorance that makes us go against our best desires. Okay, so there's our introduction. So now I'll go into a little bit more depth on each of these five powers, and then we'll open it up for some talk and discussion. So the power of motivation. So like I said, as a practitioner of the Mahayana Dharma, it'll take time, but you try and work it up to have this intention to become a Buddha, a fully awakened being, to help others do the same. So I remember Kensa Rinpoche saying to us in the class, you know, using bodhicitta, just said, stop. What does this mean? So he was after become a Buddha to bring about the awakening of all beings. So what does Buddha mean? So he's just trying to break it down into ordinary English words that we could use and go, I get it. And what he said was, what you're trying to do is to develop your wisdom and your compassion and every other skill you could possibly develop to help others. That's the goal. So when he said it like that, I thought, yeah, I get it. Sure, that makes sense to me. Okay, I'll try that. And remember, it doesn't have to be done in this life. You've got countless lives to do this. And you've got to sort of settle down and think, is that sensible? Does it make sense? Can it be done? Allow your doubts to arise and face them and ask questions about this material. If it all makes sense, you don't have to try very hard after that. You'll just go, that's the go. That's what I'm trying to do. You won't have to force yourself. In fact, many times you only have to remember it because it gets inside you. So in brief, this power of motivation is your promise to yourself. And the promise here is to keep helping others. While I live, I'll do my best to help others. I'll do my best not to harm them. And so how will I do that? Well, it requires developing some sort of wisdom, intelligence. Okay, I'll develop my wisdom and intelligence. I'll read books. I'll listen to teachings. I'll try and surround myself with people who are interested in doing the same things I am. So that, go off to the side somewhere. You try and be as skillful as you can to accomplish your goal. So in brief, you sort of say, look, this life will be lived only to bring about the benefit of others. So how can we practically apply this? Well, there's a simple way of doing it. So each morning when you wake up, you sit comfortably in your bed and then you take a couple of deep breaths. This is just to sort of get yourself centered. Then you say to yourself, today I will remember that my purpose goes beyond my own happiness. I will carry the intention out all beings and everything I do. Now there's all these different types of skills you can develop to do this. One of them is called Tong Len. So you work yourself up to this. It's a really good practice, but it requires some understanding of what you're trying to do. When I face difficulties, I will practice taking on the suffering of everyone who faces similar problems. When good things happen, I will share that happiness with all beings. Now, this is showing you how the Mahayana practices compassion and love. The wisdom has to realize that how self exists, how these phenomena exist. If you don't know that, it's very gnarly, very difficult. Once you understand that all phenomena are merely imputed by name, it's very easy. If you think it's a bit more than that, then you bring more difficulty. So when you sit up like that in the morning, you sit up in the bed and like you go, okay, well, I also know that others have done this before me. But the same intention I've got, everyone in the Mahayana tradition has this intention. So some of those people that have this intention have actually accomplished the goal. For instance, Buddha Shakyamuni. Now, once you become a Buddha, your mind is omniscient. You know all objects. But there's no object can be hidden from you. If you think that, then you have to think then, okay, then I, as a person, am known by the Buddha. I'm an object. I exist. I exist. Buddha knows that I exist. So that mind that knows you is also a mind of wisdom. It's also a mind of compassion, love. So you are really within the embrace of the mind of the Buddha. So you sort of try and feel that, like people go, oh my gosh. And you try and imagine it, like if you can, like a light beam or something like that coming down into you and lighting up your own Buddha nature. You say, just as the person called the Buddha was a human being, achieved his goal, I'm a human being, I'm seeing myself the same goal. It's possible. His wisdom, I want his wisdom to know my wisdom. Because you know at the deepest nature, these two things are only two things because of their name. They only exist duly because of name. In fact, you can't find by the separation of any two minds. Right, so you think, okay, then let the Buddha's wisdom waken my wisdom. Let his love enforce my love. A couple of days ago, I found this really great practice, and I just moved across to the Buddhist way. You know, it's about having more confidence and feeling of competency. And so one of the ways of doing it was that you put your arms up like this. Just throw your arms up. It's like, ah. Oh. And so I was doing it, but doing it with Manjushri. You know, and oh, man, and the wisdom just pours it. It's like, right, feeling completely empowered by the power, the love, and the wisdom of the Buddha. Yeah, yeah. You do it, you'll notice the difference. Let's go, okay, now I'm ready for the day. You know, when you make up sentences, you go like, oh, you yawn. Well, this time it's a little different. You just stick them out there and go, okay, I'm an object of the Buddha's love, compassion, and wisdom. Embrace me. I'm already embraced. Feel it. Okay, I'm ready for the day. This will help support your motivation. The second power is what they call the power of familiarization. So I put up here a bloke who's got one good arm and one arm that's been harmed in some ways. It's a paraplegic swimming race. But what it's saying, it doesn't matter about this. All of us have a mind. That's what you really need. You need a human body, the mind of the human being to attain enlightenment. That's the best we can ever do. So we've got it. We've also got the body of the human being, which means you could become enlightened in one lifetime. Like this guy's here, I bet you could swim better than I could. And it's because he's become familiar with swimming. We need to become familiar with our own intention and the practices that will bring it about. So the familiarity we need to become comfortable with is the two forms of enlightenment. This means enlightenment mind, meaning bodhicitta, conventional bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta. In other words, we need to become familiar with wisdom and love and compassion. That's what we need to become familiar with. You put them together, then you have the power and the skill. And the idea behind this is to make your practice who you are. You want to go out in the world as a person of love, a person that all beings can be comfortable around. And go, something really nice about this person, right? Just your presence puts people at ease. And that only comes about through familiarizing yourself with wisdom that goes against you thinking that your ego is something real and substantial, and the love and kindness, the compassion. Yamgon Kongtrul, one of the great practitioners of the Kagyu lineage, says, the most important aspect of familiarization is that it creates a natural, effortless quality to your practice. And this, I'll put this picture up on the swimming, as well, samsara, we're trying to cross the ocean. Really good, any person who's really good at sports, it seems like really natural to them, effortless. We know that's not the case, don't we? I know you get good at anything, it often takes a lot of practice until it becomes effortless. Just the same here, mental practice requires practice. You want to get good at anything, it requires practice. So this practice, or the power of familiarization, is like teaching yourself to swim well. At first, you consciously think about every movement, like kicking your legs and moving your arms and turning your head to breathe. It's awkward. It requires constant attention. But with constant practice, these movements sort of blend together and it becomes natural. And then you find yourself swimming. It's like driving car. It's like anything you do. In the beginning, it's hard. It's awkward. You're not good at it. Keep trying. I was just thinking now, we're all capable of walking, aren't we? We find it quite simple, but remember, wasn't always the case. We were little babies, we had to fall down all the time. We just couldn't do it, right? But now we do it really easily. And that's when we just kept getting up and trying, and our mum or somebody else helped us. It was a sort of, we saw what others were doing, that's how they walk, we want to walk, and we end up walking. This is like that. And, you know, if you see or get chances to be near people like His Holiness the Dalai Lama or Lama Zopa Grisha, any of the great teachers, you'll know they're different. But once they were just like us. So it should give us some sort of confidence, sort of something to aspire to. So how to practice this? So choose one small act that you can remember. And you just do it again and again. It's as simple as that. So one might be that when you hear somebody say something that you think is unkind to you or about someone else, you take a couple of deep breaths. Right? So have a chance to think about what you're going to say. So it's like, you know, always try and find the simplest things that start simple and do it. And you just make a habit out of that. You get done, you go, that's one. Now the next one, now the next one. And build it up using really the smallest steps you can find. Small and simple is probably the best way to go here. Gradually work up to it. If you have somebody you really care for, you go, that's the person I can practice kindness towards. That's the person I can practice compassion towards. It could be taking three conscious breaths before answering the phone. Silently wishing well to strangers you pass. This is a very easy one, what I do a lot. I just look at people and go, may you be happy. May you be free of suffering. Because you know that's what you want. You know that's what they want. It's a simple thing to do. The thing that inspires me to keep doing that is just the knowledge like that is love and kindness. That is compassion. Many of us probably think compassion is something that you do with your hands or with your speech. It's not, it's a thought, it's an aspiration. You start there, then speech and body can follow. The silently wishing well to strangers you pass, or pausing to feel gratitude before meals, or a shower. So I read the other day on Facebook, hot water in showers is only 50 years old. That was really shocking to me. I was like, you know, it's like we have it every day. It's every day thing, isn't it? No, it's not. So if you like him with a hot shower, like, be grateful, right? to set reminders if needed, but aim to let the situations themselves become your cues. So I remember when I first started taking up the practices of the Dharma, the thing that really attracted me was thought transformation. And so I used to write all these little messages. So like in the morning, you know, you go off to the bathroom, there's the mirror there, so you look in the mirror, I put a little note on the mirror, how to look in a mirror. You're just looking at seeing your face, it reminds you that all phenomena exist like reflections. When you do your teeth, so you have a little thing on the thing. When you push a door open, I put a little note on the door, my heart open up the lower arm, so all sentient beings can be free. So you just start doing this, and every time you see it, that's what you think. And you go, okay, you develop in your mind, you have a new way of looking at things. It's just like I said, this power of becoming familiar with a new way of thinking. So, you know, once you discover, like I said, that we create meaning, we create the purpose. Where's that coming from? You got your mind. They ask, what's my mind doing every day? Yeah, you know, when you look at it, it's a lot of rubbish most of the time, right? It's either rubbish or it's doing nothing. It's just bleeding out. So when it's bleamed out, that's the time to go, right, now I can use it, right? I can use my mind here, it's not doing very anything, it's just... So, you guys, what do you think? Anything you'd like to say? Debbie?
Something I adopted from one of the nuns at Sarasi Abbey, in the morning, she says when she wakes up, she just thinks, may I not harm anyone, may I only help others, may I become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. And I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. It's so quick and it's really easy to remember. So as soon as I wake up each morning, that's the first thing I train myself to do. And on the days I forget, you can tell, because the day is not very nice.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a little bit iffy, mate, those thermal pools. Yeah. Okay, so what was the force we just talked about? What was that force I was just talking about?
Familiarization.
Excuse me.
We must become familiar with familiarization.
That's right. I have to become familiar with that. I have to become familiar with it. That's right. What came once before the familiarization is the power of or the force of? The motivation, is that the attention or the purpose you've given your life? That's right. Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, we set a good motivation so the direction of the day goes really well.
Yeah, of course, like I say, you know, you've got to, if you have a purpose for life, you've got to make sure your life's going in that direction. In fact, you find nearly all of, you know, what we call the successful people in life, that's what they do. They decided to do something and they went ahead and did it. Okay, let's do our meditation then. Okay. So again, just get comfortable with the seat. Adjust. The back is straight, the shoulders relaxed. Feet and hands are comfortable. And then just let your eyes close. And with your eyes closed, let your body breathe itself. As the body is breathing itself, just sort of kindle the wish to discover how your conscious intention creates meaning and how this meaning could be a benefit to yourself and others. In other words, what do you want to do with this bright and beautiful life that you have? And bring your awareness down to your heart. and imagine a warm light growing brighter with each breath. This is your meaning and purpose of fusing your body and mind. Acknowledge that meaning and purpose arise and exist dependently. They arise through your conscious intention to benefit yourself and others. Each morning when you wake up, you need to familiarize yourself with the purpose of your life. This will keep your life going in the direction that you set for it. Let's ask yourself, does intention create meaning where none seemed to exist? So just as the clouds only become shapes when perceived by a conscious mind, your intention transforms ordinary activities into expressions of the enlightened mind. So what happens when you become familiar with both compassion and the wisdom realized in emptiness? So you can discover that meaning adapts to context. Sometimes the meaning appears as a direct action. Sometimes it's wisdom recognizing the dreamlike nature of the experience. Now, we looked at the power of motivation and familiarity. How could you apply these two powers or these two forces when facing challenges? So you can set your motivation each morning to respond with kindness and compassion. And through practice, this will become as natural as breathing. And the expression of your kindness and compassion will reveal great meaning to yourself in difficult times. So it's through these two forces, motivation and familiarity, that you can cultivate both compassionate action and the inside wisdom. And these will help you reveal the true meaning of life. And now breathing in through your nostrils, exhale. And then we're going to go to the next two powers, and then I will ask you what the four powers were we've just gone through, and you will tell me easily what they were, won't you? I hope. Okay, this one's called the white seed. Right, so the white seed, what does it represent? It represents purity, virtue, a virtuous mind. So And the virtuous one, here's like the idea, like practice the Dharma purely. Don't do it just for the self. You will be a happier person. You will live a much more purposeful, meaningful life. That's, I assure you, with practicing Dharma. But don't make it just because you want to be happy in this life. You will be happier in this life. But you're going to have another life. You want this stuff to go over. Go from this life to the next life, onwards and onwards until your goal of Buddhahood is reached. But don't muddy the waters and just go this life. And don't grasp for just this life to be happy. Again, the two forms of the mind of enlightenment here means this great compassion, or this wish-seeking enlightenment for the benefit of others, and the wisdom that's required to do that. Yeah, so we want to be compassionately kind people, but we also want to be skillful. The skillfulness comes with the wisdom, the intelligence. The power of the white seed is fundamentally a practice of generosity. It's giving away. So you give away like your time to spend time with another. You might give away some of your money to help somebody else. It's being not stingy. Being willing to share. So you see, the force of the white seed teaches us that spiritual growth comes not from what we accumulate, but from what we give away. Yeah, that we're all encouraged, aren't we, to accumulate. We need more. That's what we're encouraged to do. But this thing says, no. Actually, the power comes from the giving, not from the accumulating. So how to apply it? Each morning, identify one white seed you can plant today. It might be a specific act of generosity, practice of letting go of something you're attached to, or a commitment to transform a difficult situation into spiritual growth. At the end of the day, reflect on how planting this seed affected your mind and heart. So again, this is again like the thing of karma. I often talk about the seeds of karma, or the ripening of karma, the fruit of karma. We've got this, we call it agricultural metaphor. It's the same here, the seeds, you know. In other words, what are we going to create? It's good. That's the seed. Now, how do you create this goodness? So basically, give things away. Give some of your time away to somebody who needs it. Make somebody a cup of tea. There's lots of ways we give. Right? It doesn't always require something like money. The intention to help is a giving. Now the next one is called the power of rejection. I put up this because I like this one. It's like you've eaten something really terrible and you've got to get rid of it. And so again, I will purge myself of self-grasping and self-centeredness. So I spoke to one of our students the other day, and she's got a little bit upset. And she was saying, you know, like, I'm not an enlightened person. I have an ego. And I was a little bit quick to her. I said, yeah, so having an ego is not the problem. It's thinking it's real. That's the problem. Giving it more reality than it actually has. That's the problem. It's just like having an eye. It's not a problem. But if you think it's more than what it actually is, now you've got a problem. So I'm looking at your own reflection in the mirror. You know, that's not a problem unless you think your reflection is you.
I guess, Eddie, that's why the white seed is such a great antidote to that, because we are encouraged to accumulate things to build up our sense of self and our value and our reputation and all that. So when we do the opposite of it, which is being generous and no longer being attached to the things that we don't need and letting them go, sharing what we have with others.
Yeah, you see, most of the Dharma is an opposite. We find something that you are doing that doesn't work, and you just do the opposite. It's pretty simple like that. You look at what's the major problem, you know, grasping itself, or grasping at your own ego to be more than what it actually is. How do you stop that? With the intelligence that sees that your ego doesn't exist in the way you thought it did. That's the opposite. So wisdom on one side, ignorance on the other. Hatred on one side, loving kindness on the other. Criticism on one side, a sense of acceptance or generosity towards another. There's heaps of it. And it's just basically as simple as that. Saying that's really simple, doing it's not so simple. That's where the hard part comes in, is you've got these habits, you know, it's habits of thinking, habits of speaking. Yeah, so that's where it gets sort of hard. So, metaphorically, it's just think of the force of rejection like an immune system for your mind. Just as your body's immune system identifies and neutralizes harmful invaders, this force helps you identify ego-driven thoughts and prevent them from infecting your actions and attitudes. Which is when you're healthy, your immune system works quietly in the background, always on guard. Similarly, the force of rejection works best when it becomes a natural, continuous part of your awareness. And again, that's through the power of, or the force of familiarization. You've just got to sort of become familiar with what harms me and put it aside. So the key takeaway, the force of rejection is not about harsh self-criticism, but about developing the awareness to recognize when ego or self is driving your thoughts and actions. By maintaining this alert awareness, you gradually weaken ego's grip and you create space for genuine compassion and wisdom to grow. Now again, this wisdom and compassion grows within you. The primary beneficiary of this is you. We are the ones who primarily hurt ourselves, the first beneficiary is us. This force doesn't work through occasional big efforts, but through consistent and moment-by-moment vigilance against the subtle ways that your own mind will try to trick you. I mean, the ego mind here. So here's the practice. So this is the thing, what I do, I put the stuff through the AI, and then I ask for a lot of material, and I say, now give me some clues on how to work it. And so this is one of the things it said. Try this daily practice. Set a gentle reminder on your phone that asks, who's in charge right now? You or your ego? When it rings, pause and observe your current mental state. Are you focused on your own importance? Are you ignoring others' needs? If you notice ego-centered thinking, simply acknowledge it without judgment. In other words, you don't get harsh on yourself just because you're thinking about yourself. Just acknowledge it and choose to let it go. I think there's a great line in 7-point mind training. Gather all blame into one. That's what it says, right? So when blame something, we blame external phenomena, don't we? Something else is causing us problems. Well, that's completely contradictory to the Dharma. The blame is egocentricity, self-grasping. Put all blames there. So you don't blame yourself and you don't blame anybody else. You blame the subtle mind, the trickster, ego grasping, a mind that is grabbing at phenomena to objectively exist when they don't. This is very, very useful watching political stuff. It's very easy to, like, I think when this year, who's our Prime Minister there?
Albanese
was, giving a speech and somebody else was going on about Dutton. And he stopped and he said, we don't do that. So the other bloke is blaming Dutton. And Albanese calls and goes, don't do that, we don't do that. So he's blaming the person. Same in Buddhism, you don't ever blame the persons. You blame, this is like another story they give you don't really get hit by a stick. Who do you blame? Come on, tell me, simple. Yeah, it's not the person who's got the stick, don't you? Leave me alone. You're not talking to the stick, are you? You're talking to the person. Well, what's actually hurting you? The stick. The stick's hurting you, right? Who's controlling the stick? The person, isn't it? So something has control over the stick, and it's actually the stick that's hurting you. When you ask yourself, who's actually hurting me? It's your own mind. The mind that you don't have any control over. It's your ego grasping and self-centeredness. It's your hatred. All these negative emotions. That's what hurts you. That's where the blame should go. Gets hold of your mind. Harms us. So we look at Dutton and we blame Dutton. It's like, well, remember, Mr. Dutton has been held in the grip of ego grasping and self-centeredness and greed. That's where we should point the finger at, not Mr. Dutton. Those negative mental states, they're driving them. They've got him, just like the stick is being held by the person. The person is being held by these negative mental states. That's the logic, but it's not so easy to do. Okay, is there anything interesting about these two? Now remember, what were the two? What was this one we just did? You should get that.
Rejection.
Good. What was this before it?
White seed.
White seed. Excellent. Now a little tricky. What's before white seed? That's right. And before that? That's right. Motivation is a motivation or intention. We need to become familiar with what our motivation is. Knowing that, you know, that's a white seed. That's a seed of virtue. It's a virtuous mind. That's great. We need to keep doing that. Then we've got stuff that goes against it. We'll always be self-cherishing or ego-grasping. We're trying to help others. Well, this other thing will come and go. No, just care about yourself. Be indifferent. Don't care about it. You've got to go against that. Anything you guys found interesting or you'd like to... Anything online?
No, I've offered to Sandy and Anthea. They're both online, so they must be even
thought. That's right. Yeah. I can also tell you that sometimes, like to me, this material makes sense, and it might to you too, and yet you'll work against it, you'll go against it. In fact, I was talking to somebody just recently, I did this one here, and so I said, so then it would follow this, you know, and they went, no. Wow. And I had to remember, oh, that's right, I remember this other thing I learned about humans. We are irrational, inconsistent, and incompetent. And she just demonstrated. Well, yeah, well, we did this whole rational thing, and then you go, nah. When it comes to me, no. I'll do the opposite. Holy heck. Yeah, but we're like that, aren't we? And we are. So be kind to yourself. Right? Take it, don't. I mean, it's just the way it is. Remember, it's all changeable. We can always be irrational and we move towards the rational side. And when we're rational, we can go to the other side too. The primary reason for that is we just haven't developed mental strength. And that's what concentration is meant to do. Now we concentrate on the right way to think, the right way to behave, become familiar with it. Then we can. Like I said, we sit here, we go, yeah, 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 and then you go out and you do the opposite. Well, of course. You know, I mean, we just heard it, isn't it? We haven't become familiar and developed any strength in it. So always forgive yourself. Like I said, you're not to blame. You're not to blame. So don't be harsh on yourself. Okay, let's do our next meditation then. Again, just adjust your posture so your back is straight, your shoulders are relaxed. And let your body breathe itself. Now in your own time, apply the first two forces, the force of motivation and familiarity. What's your motivation? then to become familiar with your motivation, say it again. We come to these two other powers, the first being the power of the white seed and the power of rejection. And these two powers, they work together to transform ordinary experience into awakening. And when practiced daily, these two complementary forces gradually dissolve the barriers between ourselves and others. The white seed is like planting good seeds in a garden. Or the force of rejection is vigilantly removing rocks and pulling out the weeds when they appear. So I wonder what sort of virtue you could cultivate today that might blossom into compassion. Each act of kindness you engage in plants invisible seeds of awakening. So what will work against your wishes to be of benefit to yourself and others is a mind of self-preoccupation. It will take control over your thoughts. How would you recognize when it's doing that? Just simply noticing self-importance arising is the beginning of freedom from its grip. So where in your daily activities can you practice both nurturing goodness and releasing self-centeredness? The power of the white seed and the power of rejection. Where can you practice the white seed of nurturing goodness and the force of rejection in releasing self-centeredness? In fact, every interaction you have with others becomes an opportunity for this dual practice. So this evening, try to plant at least one white seed and to gently reject the voice of self-importance when it arises. And aim the fruits of this practice to benefit all beings. Now breathing in, exhale, let your eyes flutter. Okay, we now come to the last power, the power of dedication or aspirational prayer. Picture here of Lama Zopa Rinpoche. In his practice, the idea is, may I never be separated from genuine teachers, what they teach, the Dharma, and these two forms of enlightenment. So I hope at some stage you all realize the necessity of relying on somebody who knows more than you do. It can be a huge benefit for you if you find somebody that you can trust enough in terms of your spiritual development? So when you find them, you don't want to be separated from people like that. We do need people to embody kindness and compassion so that, okay, it can be done. There are exceptional people. There are also exceptionally wise people who are incredibly humble in their wisdom. And you can meet them. And when you do, you change your life. You'll know, oh my gosh, amazing people. So when you meet them, you want to try and take something away from it that's more than just the feeling. You know, you want to take away some wisdom, for instance, something you could do, something you could learn. So the Dharma, of course, remember the Dharma is what they call, if you ask what is Dharma, it's the truth of path and the truth of cessation. So that means you need a method. You have to find a method that works for you. And it has to put an end to something that you're suffering. That's the cessation. So that's Dharma, right? I have a problem, I stop it. The spiritual teachers have to help you do that. And oftentimes you need somebody to show you how to do it or talk to you about it. And of course you're doing it to bring about these two forms of the enlightenment, meaning a mind that seeks enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, conventional body, tutor, and the understanding that all phenomena lack without the intrinsic existence they seem to have. They don't have that quality. So again, it's like there isn't anything that intrinsically exists. Whatever does exist does so dependently. So I began this teaching talking about meaning, right? Meaning has no intrinsic, it doesn't exist intrinsically. It exists dependently. Meaning we have to play a part in that. Like everything you see around you is a dependent arising. A lot of us depend upon your own biology. Like you cannot stop seeing the things that you're seeing because of the way we're made up as humans. Animals are the same. There's no objective, intrinsic world out there. It's created, it's dependent. We have thoughts about what we engage with. That's a dependent arising. If you're not skillful with dependent arising, you'll create suffering for yourself. So be careful. If you're very skillful with it, you create greater happiness for yourself and others. It's all dependent arising. The causes dependent arising, it cannot be intrinsic. They're opposites. Can't have both. It's one or the other. Come on the side of dependent arising, and you're aligned with the truth. That's how phenomena exist. So this is a verse from the Guru Puja. It says, in short, whatever happens, good and bad, through practice of the five forces, essence of all Dharma, becomes a path to increase the two minds of enlightenment. Bless me to contemplate indomitable cheer. I love that line. Be cheerful, folks. The way out. Because all things are dependent. It's great, you know, like, suffering can't truly exist. It has to come to an end. You have to look at how is it created on a false premise. Gosh, that should be cheerful. The fact that we can put into our own suffering. Isn't that good news? That you can help others without harming yourself? It's great. The five forces can transform all experiences into spiritual growth. And like I've said before, even Lama Yeshe, some of these great Dharma practitioners, when it comes to dying, they use the five forces. They don't go and do all the high tantric stuff or the emptying of stuff and all these things. It's like, no, this is really simple, really simple. So I can do that. And same as ourselves, I think, find something simple. Do simple well before you try and do the more difficult things. And the five forces is something you can do easily, isn't it? You can start off every day going, it's the purpose of my life. I'm just going to refresh it. I'm just going to tell myself, be familiar with it. I know what a white seed is. It'd be good. Be something virtuous. I know what causes the problems. You go grasping self-centeredness. Okay, I've got to stay away from that. I'm dedicating my life to it. Not hard. But that's how it should be with you too. You should rather go, bang, just say it in a sentence. Okay. Now it's just all the little bits in there, isn't it? How to become wiser, how to become more compassionate. At least you've got the general shape of your life. So I put this quote in from a Lama called Galak Rinpoche. So he was a really good friend of Lama Zopa and Lama Yeshe. And what did he do? He left the monastery and then he wanted to give up being a monk. And Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa went to see him and said, "Man, what you know is astronomical. Please don't do it, you know." Anyway, he ended up having a monastery in Carolina, I think. And Robert Thurman was one of his major students. He's got, you know, great students. But anyway, I've got a commentary of his on 7-point mind training. He says, "Whatever happens, you know, what happens to me, you know, not blowing my own trumpet, is whenever I fall asleep, I find myself saying, Big man, so we touch and turn, raise it, dream, wake, and pay, one pole, jump, pole, young." So this is the prayer at the end of the Alava Kateshvara. So he says, that's because I'm so used to it, my mind has been trained. Now, it's the same with us. If you get used to something, you just do it. And this is what he's saying. He said, I've been doing this for so long, whenever I go to sleep, my mind just does it. And it could be the same with us. It's what we need to develop. So, like I said, it's effortless. And for most of us now, I'm sure, practice takes a lot of effort. My God, look at that. The time is gone. What to do at the time of death? So there's different ways of doing this. One is if you're sitting with people who aren't Buddhists, and one is if you are with Buddhists, and of course there's one for yourself. Right? Encourage dying with a happy mind. So rejoicing. Find something positive that other person has done, or you yourself, remind them of it. Think, you've been good. White seed, encourage the ripening of the white seed, right? And always be kind when you're sitting there. So sometimes, kindness means when you look at, if you're with somebody else who's dying and they're not Buddhist, you go their way. In your own mind, of course, you can be doing all your Buddhist stuff. But if they talk about Christ or something like that, you encourage them to go towards Christ. Whatever their refuge is, that's what's useful for them. So do that for them, but out of kindness. They have a belief. Encourage their beliefs to come to the fore now. If they have no beliefs whatsoever, remind them of acts of kindness. If they can't think of any, you tell them, "Mum, or you gave birth to me. Thank you. Dad, Dad didn't give birth to me. What do you do good?" Something good. Tell them. We know lots of people don't have any spiritual beliefs anymore, but they've been good. Okay, so recollect something virtuous for yourself when you are dying, when the other person is dying. And at all costs, avoid emotional outpourings when you're in front of the dying person. It's their party, it's not yours. You're the guest. You bring the presence of your Dharma, wisdom, and compassion. You're not to, like I said, take center stage and be bawling your eyes out, carrying on, or someone's in front of you dying. Don't do that. Could you imagine the dying person being happy that you're being happy like that? I can't, unless I'm really selfish. But yeah, so in other words, you do not want to distract or harm the mind of the person dying. Like after they've died, or you walk out in the hallway, you leave, and you find your emotional state's overtaking you, walk out. Go outside, cry outside, wail, whatever you want to do. So, Miffy and I have been along to a number of different scenes where people have been dying and the family's outside. That's the simplest thing. You go outside and people do this, don't they? They remind you, so remember that, remember this, remember that. And people start laughing like the wakes, you know. You remember all the stuff that happened with you and the dying person. So if you hear, that's what you do. You go and you try to remind them of all the good stuff, the fun. Right? So the people around their minds get lifted up. It's naturally depressed, but it's not good. Doesn't help you, doesn't help the dying person. So you try to lift the mind of the audience and the dying person, and it'll help you, keep your mind up too. There are many, many other things you can do, but this is the most important. It's the mental state, the heart state you bring in to yourself when you're dying, and also when you help others go. Anything you'd like to say about this part, trying to help others die? Okay, last meditation. Okay, again, you're sitting comfortably, your shoulders are relaxed, your head is sitting evenly on your neck, your eyes are closed, and your body is breathing itself, and you feel relaxed. Now imagine you're watching somebody else die. At death, nothing follows except karma. The previous behaviors of the mind, the body, the speech, they've left potentials on the mind. That's all that goes with the dying person. So like a hair pulled cleanly from butter, we leave behind all possessions, relationships, and even the physical form. When everything external falls away, only the imprints of our actions and the power of our motivations and dedications remains. So in terms of the five forces, well, they're like tending a garden. So motivation is deciding to grow beautiful flowers instead of weeds. Familiarity is developing a daily gardening routine. The white seed is planting good seeds and removing the rocks. Rejection is vigilantly pulling out weeds when they appear, and dedication is sharing the harvest with anyone who passes by. So you can use these five seeds at the time of death, these five powers. Consider the motivation of yourself sitting there with the dying person. What would be your motivation? What are you drawing familiarity upon? What's your white seed? Now, what is your rejection? What are you rejecting while you're sitting there in front of somebody else who's dying? You're going to reject emotional outpouring. You're going to reject expressions of grief while you're in front of the dying. You're going to reject anger. And the power of dedication, what will that be? So if you perform even a small virtue, dedicate it towards all beings' enlightenment. In this way, you make this very small virtue inexhaustible in terms of its power. It's like a drop of water merging with the ocean. So when you are with others at the time of death, you support their spiritual practice without disturbing their mind. You encourage them to recall virtue, and you yourself to maintain a peaceful awareness. And then you dedicate your own actions and the activities of the dying towards enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. You breathe in through your nostrils and exhale. Let your eyes flutter open. See, should all know we've got five forces or five powers you can use at the time of death and right through life to help you with your spiritual path. And the means of determining purpose in life, they're yours. You have, it's up to you. So I hope it's been useful. Take something away from it. So let's dedicate the merit we've created through engaging with us shortly. If you have material, try to read this. There's always going to appear. We live long enough, you're going to come in touch with death. Somebody you're going to know will die. It's useful to know how to behave at that time and what will help. And like next week when you come, we're doing the afflictions to perfections, and after that there's a review class. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arising grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. The wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind, Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And in holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through exploration and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, and make this request.